Hi and welcome to Last Man Standing with me, Paul Stevenson, on this Sunday, the 3rd of July, 2022. I thought am I reading that correctly on my computer? Yes, it is indeed July. Wow. Excuse my voice. It's a little croaky today. I'm a little underslept. I stayed up last night just doing a lot of reading and watching content and neglected to get enough sleep. So my voice is a little croaky, but welcome. Excuse me. Welcome to the show on this, as I say, 3rd of July, 2022, the day before the 4th of July, obviously. And that, of course, will be discussed at length on shows here on RBN throughout the week. I do believe that there will be no actual live shows on Monday, so I won't be doing my show with Richard Kerry beyond the official narrative at midday central tomorrow. But like I said, I'm sure I'll catch up with him later in the week, and probably Patrick Slattery. I'm also on with Andrew Carrington Hitchcock on the Dankoff Report with Mark Dankoff tomorrow. So if you get the time, tune in for that. That goes out on the Rents Network, and also Andrew Carrington Hitchcock.com. I think it's just the best. It's just ach.com. That'll go out at 4 p.m. Is it 4 p.m.? No, it's 2 p.m. UK time. So that will be 8 Central, 9 Eastern. And then Thursday, of course, I will be live with Dr. David Duke, and that is 4 p.m. UK time, 10 p.m. Central time. So we'll get talking about the 4th of July a lot. I've got other things I want to talk about today. Obviously, you know, one of the biggest challenges is the glut of information that's out there, and sifting through it to cover in a one-hour show, or even a two-hour show like I will be doing on Mark Collett's show on Patriotic Weekly Review on Wednesday. That is also, by the way, 7 p.m. UK time, which is 1 p.m. Central, 2 Eastern. But yeah, there's a lot of information out there, and there's a lot happening. There really is. I mean, it always feels like there's a lot happening, but it's almost impossible to keep up with it. And but just the whole Ukraine situation, that everything that is emerging out of that, and it's really accelerating, I think, this divide between the East and the West, between Putin and pushing him obviously closer to China, the global South, which isn't condemning Russia, despite the threat from the Western countries, particularly US and the British, which are completely dominated by Jewish interests, obviously, and Zionist interests. So they are holding out for now, not so strong in their resistance in Germany or here, despite the fact they've been completely counterintuitive to our interests, both economically and with their national security. And of course, that's the great irony, isn't it? While Johnson grandstands about how we must stand by Ukraine no matter what, without actually giving us any explanations as to why we must do this, and Liz Truss, our wonderfully articulate and educated foreign secretary, with the assertions and the assumptions, but never any explanations to the British public as to why we must stand by Ukraine and why we must get involved and send arms in. And there's actually, it's emerged, there's quite a large British mercenary presence in the Ukraine. And that, of course, far from like they like to claim and espouse, that we must stand by them for our national security interests and for the security of the world. This is only putting a target on our back. And that's just the UK. As I say, there's a lot of developments. Just you've now got Sweden and Finland, of course, joining that NATO bloc. There are some spanners in the works with Erdogan in Turkey, but I think Erdogan will get his F-16 jets, or he's already been promised them, and some other goodies, and he will relinquish any protestations about Finland and Sweden joining NATO. Putin has recently said that NATO, that he has no problem with Sweden and Finland joining NATO, which surprised me a little bit. And again, that his only interest is in preventing a hostile government in Kiev, and that the Ukraine remain neutral when it comes to NATO. He's always been consistent about that, but it surprised me a little bit that he doesn't have an issue with Finland and Sweden joining it, and that he doesn't see this an escalation of aggression, which I do. And there are other developments in NATO as well, but we can discuss those. I've got lots of time this week on different shows to get through that. I'm still getting through it myself, and but there are a lot, and there are a lot of changes happening, and geopolitically, which are unprecedented, really, since, I would say, well, certainly since World War II, there's a shift happening. And my fear is this war will escalate into a World War III thing, partly as a smokescreen from the dire economic situation which has been created by, for the most part, Jewish bankers and Jewish interests, again, conducting the largest wealth transfer and looting operation in human history that the majority of the Western nations haven't quite figured out has happened. Like, I've used the analogy, when you walk into your house when it's been burgled, you might go through the door and you see a little bit of a mess, and the mess gets worse, and your worst fears come true when you go into your beautiful living room and your piano is gone and your lovely settee is gone and you've been ransacked and everything that's not nailed down is gone. And then you will ask, who has robbed me? And this is why Janet Yellen and the central bankers are coming out and saying that they didn't know about inflation. These are people who are supposed to have a certain gravitas in economic knowledge, you would think, being chairs of Federal Reserves and Treasury of the Secretary of the Treasury, but they can come out and say, oh no, well, you know, we thought this inflation thing was transitory. Oh, it's not transitory. Well, we got it wrong. We didn't know. It's incompetence. And that should tell you something. These people would rather claim incompetence, which, think about it, it's quite a big thing if you've got those types of titles, and yet you prefer to claim incompetence, because what's the alternative? The alternative is that you did it deliberately and you're a mass thief, and they are scared of that. Anyway, that's a side issue. But this stuff is all intersecting. It's all it's all inextricably linked. Is that the word? I think so. But it's all intersecting, and there are a lot of different interests and aspects at work here, but as I've always espoused, they are largely driven by Jewish interests. And that's why, in my opinion, the world is in the state that it's in, and I just hope we can avoid a World War III situation as the great distraction. They talk about the great reset, the great distraction from their theft. But anyway, one of the other things I wanted to cover about Johnson and his protestations of how this is in British interest. I mean, inflation here is at its highest level since the 70s. It's not just in assets anymore. It's in fuel prices. It's in grocery prices. And it's hurting people. And you wouldn't need to be some sort of economist to have worked it out. When you print up the sort of money and you have the sort of economic and fiscal policies that you guys and that we here have adopted, and the European central banks and the EU have adopted, that it's going to result in inflation. Apparently, this is news to a lot of people, but Mass ignorance, it seems, well, it is just that, ubiquitous. But in terms of just the security alone in the West or in the UK, this is an article in My London News by Will Twigger. I want to give the source of this so you can check it for yourself. Russian MP calls for London to be bombed first if World War III breaks out. Putin's ally said they wouldn't target Paris or Warsaw, but London first. A close ally of Vladimir Putin has said that Russia should make London its number one target in Europe if World War III were to break out. Reservist General and MP Andrei Gurilov said that it's, quote, crystal clear the threat to the world is from the Anglo-Saxons. And that's a shame too, because they either don't know that the actual threat is from Jews, or they do know and they're playing along to blame the Anglo-Saxons, as he says here, which essentially basically is blaming white Western nations, the US, Europe, and us here. Appearing on Russian state TV, Gurilov said, or also claimed there was strategic sense in Russia invading Baltic states should the fighting start, specifically those aligned with NATO. This, he said, would prevent the blockading of Russian exclave Kaliningrad, will destroy the entire group of enemy space satellites during the first air operation, Gurilov speculated. No one will care if they are British or American or British. We would see them all as NATO. Second, we'll mitigate the entire system of anti-missile defense everywhere and 100%. The general added, third, we certainly won't start from Warsaw, Paris, or Berlin. The first to be hit will be London. It's clear that the threat to the world comes from the Anglo-Saxons. Seemingly confident in the plan, Gurilov reckoned he had it sussed when it came to tactics. He boasted, quote, as part of the operation to destroy critically important sites, Western Europe will be cut off from power supplies and immobilized. All power supplies will be destroyed. And in the third stage, I shall see what the USA will tell Western Europe on continuing their fight in the cold without food and electricity. I wonder how they will manage to stay aside. This is the rough plan, and I deliberately leave out certain moments because they are not to be discussed on TV. So, make of that what you will. This guy sounds like he's a bit of a loose cannon, but when you listen to Putin and when you listen to Sergey Lavrov these days, the kind of the gloves are off. The sanctions has pulled the gloves off them, I think, particularly. And the fact that they ignored their legitimate security concerns for years and led to this situation, which I believe has grieved Vladimir Putin and grieved the Russian Sergey Lavrov and people like this, that it had to come to that. Because I don't believe Vladimir Putin's a warmonger and the sort of hatred that he's had to suffer. And the demonization and dehumanization that he's had to endure. And actually, Bernie Ecclestone, who was the founder of Formula One and was still, head honcho at Formula One up until 2017, recently came out, obviously very controversially, on a mainstream media talk show in the UK here and said that he would take a bullet for Vladimir Putin. And that he is a very impressive man, and it was just full of praise for him and defended him, and he didn't back down. He didn't play along with the Western propaganda that we here and our liberal democracies are so wonderful, and that the Ukraine are so wonderful, and that Zelensky's so wonderful and a great war hero, and that this was the unprovoked attack by Russia. He didn't play along with it. I was absolutely amazed that they actually allowed him on a mainstream network and to discuss this whole conflict and this whole Russia-Ukraine situation with any nuance and any context, because it has been completely devoid of it, of both those things in Western coverage of the conflict. And we are seeing a continuation and an escalation of atrocity propaganda, which, of course, sadly, actually has an effect and is successful with, well, let's say, less sophisticated minds when it comes to disseminating information. And, well, also arrogant and very stupid and over emotional people, who buy into all this. But make of that article what you what you will. As I say, it's quite shocking when I heard it. But again, the gloves are off, and we've been very aggressive to Russia. The UK have been very aggressive in their rhetoric towards them, and I suppose this guy, even though he sounds like a bit of a loose cannon, he just doesn't care what he says anymore. And when Putin gave his last speech in St. Petersburg, I thought he was very bold as well. You know, there's definitely a shift in how they're talking. So that's one article that I can cover, or that I wanted to cover. Again, if you want to check it out, it's Russian MP calls for London to be bombed first if World War III breaks out, and Boris Johnson talks about how we must send over lots of our print up more money and send it over to the Ukraine when we're broken and debt to our teeth and people are struggling to live, and talks about how we need to protect our security interests. This is the same guy, by the way, who does nothing about our borders, where we have people flooding in from God knows where, most of them in the Middle East, Syria, North Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa. We have no idea who the hell they are. And he talks about security, and all he's doing with this is putting a target on our back. It's disconcerting, quite frankly. And I think there needs to be some protest and needs to be some pushback in the UK on this whole support of Ukraine. It just doesn't seem to be any cool heads in the room. It's like no one seems to sort of fear a war anymore. No one seems to take it seriously or think that Russia is capable, or we seem to have lost our fear of nuclear weapons. But I think people need to start waking up and realizing this threat is kind of lurking in the background, because I think this thing could get out of hand. Because there are Jewish interests, you know, who are invested, I think, in letting and causing it to get out of hand. But the story is in My London. Oh, and it's got a little heart beside it in the Ukrainian colors. Oh, well, it's better than the rainbow colors, I suppose. We had gay pride marches over here as well in London, you know. If ever there was an oxymoron, that is it. Right. What else have I got here to cover? Actually, I may as well stay on this topic a little longer. I mentioned Bernie Ecclestone. And Bernie Ecclestone is the the ex-chief of Formula One up until recently. And this is in the Express, but you know, it's been covered a lot in Western media, as you'd imagine, with great outrage. Bernie Ecclestone sparked an outpouring of furious reaction from GMB, which is Good Morning Britain viewers, which is very mainstream normie listeners. On Thursday, as he described Russian President Vladimir Putin as a decent man amid the ongoing war with Ukraine, "I'd take a bullet for him." So Bernie's not holding back. Bernie knows him, you see, because of the Russian, he introduced Formula One to Russia, which is now banned, as you'd expect, as we do here in our liberal democracies, and then accuse our apparent enemies as authoritarian regimes, impervious to irony, as usual, or just oblivious to their own double standards and a hypocrisy born out of utter hubris, I believe. As Putin's Russian army continues its invasion of Ukraine, his friend and Formula One boss Bernie Ecclestone appeared on Good Morning Britain to share his thoughts on the Russian president's actions. And then a remark which shocked Kate Garraway, Ben Shepherd, and ITV viewers as a whole. Bernie said he'd, quote, take a bullet for Putin and claimed the war was merely a mistake. Much like Douglas McGregor, shocked, normie, lefty, ignorant, arrogant viewers when he said that he didn't think Zelensky was a hero and that he was a clown causing essentially a meat grinder in the Ukraine and was just going to result in the deaths of thousands, and you know that phrase, they're going to keep this thing going to the last Ukrainian. But anyway, Bernie's not holding back here, and why should he? Don't suppose he cares, he's old enough, he's 91. But he said it was a mistake, but after things have happened, it's too late. Could it have been stopped? Very, very easily, Ecclestone suggested. Suggesting Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was to blame. I mean, this is like a red rag to the rainbow crowd, Ukrainian flag waving crowd, LGBTQ plus liberal democracy, Jewish run, brainwashed, indoctrinated army. So, needless to say, it didn't take long for fans to vent fury at Bernie's remarks. Needless to say, indeed. As I say, you're not allowed to say anything beyond the official narrative. You're not allowed to suggest anything good about Vladimir Putin. You're not allowed to discuss that conflict with any nuance or context. Why that you bears fumed? What a prick Bernie Ecclestone is. Said he'd take a bullet for Putin. Says Putin is a decent man. What? In capital letters. Bernie Ecclestone car crash interview. Don't give him airtime. Disgusting. Yeah, don't give him airtime. We don't want any more views on here. Bernie Ecclestone on GB News. What an absolute dinosaur. Why is he getting airtime defending Nelson Piquet's comments? That's a different story where apparently Nelson Piquet is an ex, he's an ex-F1 driver who apparently used the N-word to describe Lewis Hamilton. But has claimed in his defense, this was on South American TV, that this was not as absolutely insulting, derogatory, pejorative, and racist as it might appear, and that there is, you know, this word is not necessarily seen in the way that we in the West here, who are so provincial, of course, and think that, that's the irony, isn't it, Lewis Hamilton lectures people about they need to educate themselves, but basically we're so provincial here in the West that we apply everything to our again liberal democratic LGBTQ Jew run standards where white people are evil and everyone else are victims of our racism. But in South America, guess what, a lot of them don't think the way we do. In fact, they laugh at us. I know someone in Ecuador. And white people keep themselves very separate from the indigenous populations over there and make no apologies for it. But that's a separate issue. But he got it, of course, it was both barrels from the British public, or usually, again, about half the British public anyway, for what he said. He defended Nelson Piquet. Another text or another tweet, a blatant example of an old, white, rich, out-of-touch right-wing male in a position of power, so damaging. What power has he got? He's a retired F1 boss. He doesn't have any power. Anyway, someone needs to take Bernie aside and have a word. This is embarrassing. He doesn't agree with me. This doesn't agree with what BBC News and Sky News are telling me. They just can't process. They're having a complete meltdown. But Bernie went on to say that he didn't believe the war was intentional to be a war, and the Ukraine had wanted to get, and if had Ukraine wanted to get out properly, they could have done, which is exactly right. This could have been avoided, no problem. There was this theater of diplomacy right up to the very end of this, before February 24th this year, and Putin's legitimate security concerns, which are reasonable and have been ignored for years, despite him being a broken record and despite the coup in 2014. The people who are listening don't know anything about this, and they don't want to know. Try telling them. Maybe some of you have. Good luck. But he's right, it could have been avoided. Bernie also shared his opinion on Russian F1 Formula One drivers who've been excluded from the competition. He said it's wrong to stop Russian athletes, drivers, including drivers, taking part in their sports. So, Bernie, of course, got himself into hot water here, the British normie public, for calling Vladimir Putin a decent man, that he'd take a bullet for him, and that it could have been avoided, and Zelensky's the problem, and he's the culprit for all of this. That's in the Express. It's Bernie Ecclestone. I know in the US you guys are not as familiar or interested in Formula One as we might be here in Britain, but Bernie Ecclestone is obviously a very wealthy, very famous entrepreneur who began Formula One and took it from nothing really to what it is today, a multi-million pound sport that gives that victim Lewis Hamilton millions of pounds that he tries to avoid his taxes on doing what he loves to do. I mean, this guy, the arrogance, because Lewis, far from being a victim, Lewis seems to think that he can go through life without any suffering, including maybe, as I say, there's ambiguity with the comment used by Nelson Piquet. Nelson Piquet also happens to be the father of Max Verstappen, who's the current world champion of F1 world champion. He's the father of his girlfriend. But Lewis, I think we've all had insults in our lives, I know I have, and maybe I've deserved some of them, and maybe I haven't. But you have to be a very arrogant person to think you can go through life without someone calling you a name or insulting you in some way that's offensive. Or in Lewis's case, he deems offensive or seems to want to take offense to. But this guy just seems to think that he can go through life, Lewis Hamilton, whose mother is white, by the way, without any pain or suffering, completely without gratitude and just brimming with self-pity. And he's ultimately a complete narcissist who kicks up a fuss anytime there's any possible insult or slur towards him. He's just not a very likable chap. The drivers in Formula One don't like him. They have to toe the line because they know they'll lose their seats, they'll lose their drives because it's so politicized today, Formula One. In fact, there was another young F1 driver who's on the Red Bull Junior team who lost his job after investing a lot of money, no doubt, and it's expensive to do that and to get into F1. And to drive to that extent, because I think he said something homophobic, or maybe it was the N-word towards Lewis Hamilton as well. But Red Bull wasted no time and just sacking him. So the British Grand Prix was on today, and this was all part of it, and of course condemning racism. Maybe Lewis Hamilton could use his position and his influence to condemn our government's economic and fiscal policies. Or grooming gangs, or something worth condemning outside of himself, of course, which might affect other people. As I say, if I could, I know I love to write music. If I could write music and produce music every day and get paid millions for it, I think I could withstand a few insults now and again. As I say, I don't do that. I'm not a millionaire. I'm not a famous musician, and I've had a few insults in my time. So what? But you see, the insult is about, oh, it's racism, and it's about Lewis Hamilton. And once it's racism, then it's obviously Satan incarnate. You could call someone, I don't know, In fact, Bernie Ecclestone brought this up. That's not the full interview I read, but he rebuked Lewis Hamilton as well, because Bernie Ecclestone's very short, and Bernie said, people have called me shorty in my time, and big deal. He said, more or less what I'm saying, that, we live in a society now. Well, certain people do, like Lewis Hamilton, where no insult is tolerable, and it's this whole big fiasco. And the media are, again, you don't hear them talking about the grooming gangs too much, or that pedophile over there in America. What's her name? I forget the one that was involved with is it Harvey Weinstein? Not Harvey Weinstein. Oh, my mind's tired. But you don't hear him talking, or the mainstream media talking about anything important. But these little comments that maybe they're racist. No, they're all over it and having a complete meltdown. So anyway, that was Bernie Ecclestone boldly, unashamedly defending Vladimir Putin and blaming Zelensky. And he is 100% right. Okay, let's go to a little break for a couple or 3 minutes. All right, you're back here with me, Paul Stevenson, on Last Man Standing here on Republic Broadcasting Network. Before I go on, I should have remembered at the start of the show, but I didn't. Do support the network. That's Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org. Easiest way is to go to the homepage and you will see the various donate options there, because we rely on that to keep networks like this on the air. We're up against 24-hour aggressive propaganda networks, and you're not going to hear the type of information that you hear on those networks like you will here in RBN. And it's important for people to listen. I mean, I enjoy doing these shows. I think I would go crazy if I didn't. I was thinking about it at the weekend, and we've often said it. It's with everything that's swirling around us and the nefarious forces at work. It's good to have some solidarity, and I enjoy doing these shows. I guess the other side of that coin is that you're constantly filling your head with it and analyzing it and critiquing it. But we do need solidarity, so we can stave off the isolation and atomization that white people particularly are experiencing in the in the Western cultures today, but also the degeneracy, the Christian church has fallen so far. And when you come to networks like this, you can hear some real information, and of course you can call in and interact with this, and I think that's important to people. I know it is. I know people out there who do feel isolated, and it's just important to be able to talk and share these ideas. So do go and support us there, because we really need that, and we appreciate that. If you want to support the work I do, you can do that on PayPal. It's Stevenson underscore P5 at sky.com. Okay, so I've covered actually more than I thought. I've gotten through more than I thought, but again, one of the challenges is to decide what you're going to cover. There's another story, and I think it portends to a dark future for Europe, if you'll pardon the pun. Of course, with mass immigration, this is already occurring, but I think it can get worse when I read the story. You'll understand what I mean about a dark future for Europe, and to pardon the pun. But I thought this was quite a interesting story, and it occurred in just north of Morocco. It's a little Spanish territory, and let me see if I can find it. Where have I put it? I've got it here somewhere. Okay, here it is. It's and this is carried in Al Jazeera, but if you look for it, it's carried in quite a lot of mainstream articles. 18 migrants die in attempt to enter Spain's Melilla, spelled Mellilla. Deaths occurred during attempted mass crossing into Spanish North African enclave by some 2,000 migrants, officials say. Moroccan authorities said that 18 migrants, and when you read these different articles, I've got a few of them here. I've picked this one from Al Jazeera, just so to give a basic structure of the story and outline of the story. But as I say, it's carried by all our news outlets, and there are differing opinions, and there's already propaganda going on here with the numbers of deaths and injuries and what exactly happened. Of course, this is totally politicized already. But the Moroccan authority said that 18 migrants were killed and dozens of migrants and police officers were injured in a stampede of people trying to cross into the Spanish North African enclave of Melilla. So this is Spanish territory. A spokesperson for the Spanish government's office in Melilla said about 2,000 people attempted to enter the North African city on Friday morning during a violent two-hour skirmish. About 130 successfully breached the border between Morocco and the Spanish enclave. They're coming up from sub-Saharan Africa. Morocco's Interior Ministry said in a statement that the casualties occurred when the refugees, and again, it's debatable where these people are refugees. They never actually say what they're fleeing from. You'll hear these very vague, nebulous terms that they're fleeing from the war in Sudan. Well, listen, when they say that, maybe they are, maybe they aren't. But Sudan's a pretty big landmass. Even in the Ukraine, or in any war, not everywhere is affected by it. I lived in Northern Ireland, and people thought, oh, it must have been horrible. You must have been seen some horrible things. I never saw anybody being killed. I still had a reasonably normal life. Now, I know some wars are worse than others, and that was a sort of more of a guerrilla warfare. But the idea that these people are fleeing war, and that it's just every little bit of inch of land has just been bombed on a daily basis, and these people are fleeing, it's absurd. They never go into detail, and I believe they don't go into detail deliberately. Excuse me. And when the refugees and migrants tried to climb on the iron border fence separating the two territories, five migrants were killed and 76 injured, and 140 Moroccan security officers were injured, the ministry said. So they're coming up, flooding up in from sub-Saharan Africa, and they're basically deciding to breach. It's like, if you see the pictures of it, it's quite a high wire fence barrier thing, and they're climbing up on top of it and they're pulling it from underneath, about 200 of them, another article I watched said. And so they're, and then they were attacking the essentially the border tech force. 13 of the injured migrants later died in the hospital, raising the death toll to 18, according to Morocco's official news agency MAP, which cited local authorities. The Moroccan Human Rights Association reported 27 dead, but the figure could immediately couldn't immediately be confirmed. Of course, the usual outcries from human rights organizations, because if you're a North, if you're a European country, you're not allowed to have borders, you see. And if you have a stampede of, and again, they're young Sudanese men deciding to breach those borders and then attempting to attack the border protection forces, then you're evil. And they are victims of human rights atrocities. It's a terrible thing. People dying like that, you see pictures of it, but you know, stay in your own country. Don't try and breach people's borders. Don't put your hand on the fire and you won't get burnt. Course, you just, if you come to the shores of Britain in southern England, the border force will go out and actually pick you up and give you a cup of tea and some buns and tell you how to get benefits and tell you to say that everybody's racist and homophobic and xenophobic so that they know what to say. But these Spanish guys decided to protect their borders. They went on that Spanish officials said 49 civil guards sustained minor injuries. Four police vehicles were damaged by rocks thrown by some migrants. These poor migrants jumping all over your fence, ripping it apart, climbing over it, attacking the border force patrols, and throwing rocks. And then we have to feel sorry for them because they came from a war-torn country, apparently. Even if they did come from a war-torn country, this is why I said this portends a very dark future. Because everybody, if they had the choice, probably, well, a vast majority of them, if you look at the evidence of how many of them are here, and I'm not dismissing how bad it is already, but it's getting worse. But Europe's in compared to the rest of the world, it's a pretty small landmass. Why are they not going to India or Israel or another African country? No, we need to go to Europe. It's always Europe. It's the only destination on the map. And then we're told we're so racist here, you see. Now, if I heard that there was a country in Africa or India, which actually is one of the most racist countries in the world, I don't think I would be risking my life to go there. Images on Spanish media showed exhausted refugees and migrants laying on the pavement in Melilla, some with bloodied hands and torn clothes. Those who succeeded in crossing went to a local migrant center where authorities were evaluating their circumstances. Now, if you look at the pictures as well, I think they're really exaggerating it as as an absolute massacre because there's a lot of bodies lying on the ground. But I saw one of the bodies moving and they were all supposed to be dead bodies. The incident at the border crossing was the first since Morocco and Spain mended diplomatic ties in March. A large group of sub-Saharans broke through the access gate of the Barrio Chino border checkpoint and entered Melilla by jumping over the roof of the checkpoint. Last time I checked, that's what's called a criminal, the Spanish government's delegation in the area said in an early statement. All of them men and apparently adults, it added. The migrants arrived at the crossing at about 6:40 a.m. local time, and the crossing took place at 8:40 a.m. or 640 GMT. Melilla and Croatia, Spain's other tiny North African enclave, have the European Union's only land borders with Africa, making them a magnet for migrants. Well, we're much further north, and we are also a magnet for migrants. And there's the British the channel in between the mainland and us as well. Doesn't seem to make much difference to them. Morocco deployed a large number of forces to try to repel the crowd from the border and cooperated actively with Spain's security forces, the Spanish delegation said in a separate statement. In March this year, Spain ended a year-long diplomatic crisis by backing Morocco's autonomy plan for Western Sahara, going back on its decades-long stance of neutrality. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez then visited Rabat, R-A-B-A-T, maybe it's pronounced Rabat, I don't know, and the two governments held a, quote, new stage in relations. The dispute began when Madrid allowed Brahim Ghali, leader of Western Sahara's pro-independence Polisario Front, to be treated for COVID-19 in a Spanish hospital in April 2021. A month later, some 10,000 migrants surged across the Morocco border into Spain's Ceuta enclave. It's Ceuta spelled C-E-U-T-A. I'm not overly familiar with the area. As Moroccan border guards looked the other way in what was widely seen as a punitive gesture by Rabat. Rabat calls for Western Sahara to have an autonomous status under Moroccan sovereignty, but the Western Saharan Polisario movement wants a United Nations supervised referendum on self-determination as agreed in a 1991 ceasefire pact. In the days just before Morocco and Spain entered their diplomatic crisis, there were several attempted mass crossings of migrants in Melilla, including one involving 2,500 people, the largest such attempt on record. The restoration of ties with Morocco has meant a drop in arrivals, and the number of migrants who reached the Canary Islands in April was 70% lower than in February, government figures show. But this goes on all the time, and I believe it's going to get worse. It may well be exacerbated by the type of sanctions that we put on Russia, where we make it difficult for Russia to operate in the SWIFT system and export wheat, export fertilizers to African countries. With a rising population and an increase in famine, there's already a famine in Somalia, and the borders the way they are in Europe, this is why I'm talking about an African tsunami in years to come, unless one of those things changes. And it's not going to be the birth rates in Africa, and in the near future it's not going to be the sanctions on Russia. This war is going to go on, and they want it to go on. So it's got to be our borders. Otherwise, like I said, it pertains to a very dark future for Europe, and a very tragic one at that. We've already seen in the last 40 years an almost irrevocable alteration of the demographics and subsequently the culture in Europe. I don't know how much more we can take. It's very difficult to stay positive about it, but they just keep coming and coming and coming, and it's an endless flow of them in Africa. That's not to mention the Middle East, places like Syria, Iran. I wish it could be more positive, but you know, it's hard to stay positive about it, quite frankly. All we can hope for is that we somehow put enough pressure on our governments to start securing our borders, because otherwise Europe is not going to survive. In fact, there was an interesting clip on GB News, which considers itself sort of right wing, sort of, you know, it's leftist, it's GB cringe, I call it. It attempts to be edgy. It's kind of your centrist types, Nigel Farage and those sorts, you know, condemning identity politics and the type. And the ex-editor of the Sun newspaper, he said, our troops should invade northern France and shoot dead the people smugglers. This was on GB News. Now, this is like reasonably mainstream media. As I say, it was kind of came out as a reaction to the whole LGBTQ cultural Marxist white hating mainstream media, but they're still pretty normie, really. But they do cover some good stuff. They'll cover things like the grooming gangs and occasionally Mark Steyn and people like that. And he will talk about the Great Reset and other things. So, I mean, in terms of like in quotes, I call them mainstream media light. They're an improvement, I guess, but still controlled opposition. But he said, his name's Kelvin McKenzie, that our troops should invade northern France and shoot dead the people smugglers. So you are seeing people getting more frustrated with the fact that we do nothing about it and we're just a soft touch. And he said, I quite admire Kenneth batting it all away and saying, but we get friendly with those European people, this problem will disappear. That is crap with a capital C, to be honest. The reality was that if Rwanda had happened, so we pretended we'd put on a big theater over here with the most duplicitous Home Secretary we ever had, and that really is saying something, that we were going to deport some of these migrants to Rwanda. The only person that I think she's actually deported in her tenure is Julian Assange. So he said if we had have deported those people to Rwanda, no one's coming, which of course he's right, because if people think they're going to go travel up through breakthrough borders in southern Europe, head through every country in Europe, get on a dinghy and come to southern England, and you're going to be then flown back to Rwanda, why would you bother? I mean, we just attract them. It's so obvious we do nothing. And the Conservative government are even worse than the Labour government because they pretend that they want to do something about it. He said, if we do that, no one's coming across the channel because they're going to end up back in Rwanda. He said, otherwise, we're going to have a problem. The whole of the Middle East and much of Africa wants to head to Western Europe. The French and Germans, nobody is going to help us. So we should take some of our troops and we should head towards France and say we're actually going to invade the northern sands of France and shoot the dead smugglers or shoot the smugglers dead. I would be much more in favor of some kind of violent answer. And the idea that a dream. The well alternative, remember Kinnock? I'm reading this off a transcript. But anyway, you get the picture. So this guy's talking about, rightly so, I believe, because it is an invasion under the guise of, these refugees and asylum seekers. But make no mistake about it, it is an invasion. We fought the Germans, those evil Nazis, and protected those borders before. And now they just come in and we pick them up and sometimes they just disappear into the countryside. Other times there'll be many of them, the majority of them are put in hotels at the expense of the taxpayer. And if the government's not going to do anything, I've often thought that something more extreme is necessary. And because they have to feel that there's some consequences for what they're doing. And of course, people have to tiptoe around this issue, not wanting to say we want to just maintain our own demographic and cultural anatomy, and we shouldn't have to feel bad about it, like most people around the world do, the vast majority of people do. China's for the Chinese. Last time I checked, Israel, I think they only allow Jews in there. Maybe a DNA test to get in there, but never mind. But you don't see this multiculturalism phenomena in the way around the world like you do in Europe. And when you're invaded like that, but it's the way they express this is that, oh, the poor victims are coming across. They never say that the country and our people are victims. They have to say, so they can try and stop it. The argument goes, well, if you really care about these refugees, you're going to stop these e evil people smugglers and these human traffickers who are taking all their money so they can come to England for a better life. And maybe that's true. But that shouldn't be the first and main concern of our government. That should be to protect our borders. But anyway, they put this argument across. But the anger's there. This guy, as I say, is a bit older again. And even on GB News, they pushed back on too. There's a couple of women on there. Oh, that's very extreme. Look at the demographic shifts into the UK and Europe. That's extreme. The situation is extreme. It needs an extreme reaction. And I think he's right. This is seen. This should be acknowledged and observed as what it is, which is an invasion of our shores, and it should be dealt with like that. If the military goes over there, and a few of these people smugglers get blown up and killed, they're not coming. They're going somewhere else. And I know it's not pleasant. But those who have been lobbying our governments for 50 plus years to destroy us are not pleasant either. And if we don't do something to protect our borders, like I said earlier, Europe has no future. Folks, I'm going to leave it there. I won't be with Richard Kerry tomorrow because of the 4th of July. I will be on Andrew Carrington Hitchcock on Tuesday at 8 p.m. Central, 9 a. or sorry, 8 a.m. Central, 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. in the UK, and also on PWR with Mark Collett, Patriotic Alternative, at 7 p.m. UK time, which is 1 p.m. Central, and with the one and only Dr. David Duke on Thursdays at 4 p.m. UK time, 10 a.m. Central. Hope you have a great weekend and enjoy your 4th of July over there across the pond. And take care and God bless.